Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky coming to you Monday afternoon, about a day before the Lakers kick off the 2014-2015 season for reals, Andy. None of this preseason bullshit anymore, okay? fake game nonsense.
Getting down to brass tacks.
This is the real shit now, okay? Mm-hmm. We're about to step into the shit.
Literally and figuratively.
And we're going to stay there, yeah. Okay? Mm-hmm. We're going to stay there until April and not a second longer.
No. 2015 could very well be more shit.
I just meant for this season. Okay. Let's not depress people.
Okay.
I just mean we're about to get neck deep in the shit, and we're going to stay there.
If like a NAM vet, for example, asked a Laker, were you in the shit?
Yes.
They'll say, yeah, I was in the shit.
Yeah, I was in the shit. What was that in? What was that
Rushmore.
From? Rushmore, right. It's a great movie. Okay.
If we want to make it more, I guess you could say an Iraqi vet. I mean, really, anyone who saw combat and was in
really,
the shit.
To be perfectly honest, just anybody who saw Rushmore.
Right.
I think that's really what we're
works on
really
either level.
What we're getting at
here. The point being, it's going to be a tough season for the Lakers.
Yeah, but
we're thinking.
But even if it's not, we're still going to get neck deep in it because that's how the Lakers are going to get to the playoffs, because they're going to be a smash mouth team and they're going to get up in other people's shit and they're going to get in the shit and they're going to mix the shit around. All right?
Ew.
You know what? It's unpleasant, but that's how it's going to get done.
I agree with the unpleasant part.
Yeah. The Lakers are just going to be a little shittier than everyone else, and that's how they're going to get to the playoffs.
I also agree with that analysis, half of it. They're going to be a little shittier than everyone else.
I'm thinking of things from like a Dirty Jobs kind of perspective, and you're just taking me literally. You got to play with this metaphor,
man. I am playing with it. I am praising the parts of the analysis that are correct.
That are correct. All right. So anyway, a lot to get to. We got our season predictions, because it's not just the Lakers who are starting their season. The other teams are too.
Yeah. The world may revolve around Kobe Bryant and the Lakers, but the truth is there are 20 other nine teams given the privilege of playing with Kobe Bryant and the Lakers.
And if there weren't, they still might have trouble making the playoffs. But that's, I'm sorry, that was a cheap shot. But anyway, so we have our predictions coming up. They're just going to be shittier than everyone. But because of that willingness to get shitty, Andy, it's going to be this thing that allows them to actually come out smelling like a rose.
Let me explain to people, if they really want to understand this shit metaphor driving into the ground.
Just to clarify for people, this is not the podcast that we do for ESPN.
No. This is the independent Land O' Lakers.
Nor will it be one that we're sending to them.
No. Independent Land O' Lakers podcast. But to carry this shit metaphor and just kick it like a dead horse even further, remember at the end of Shawshank Redemption when Tim Robbins
has to literally crawling through it and he climbs out the other end?
I believe they said it was
two
football fields
of foul and stinking stench, the likes of whatever.
Right. Picture about 20 football fields.
82 games worth of that.
And that's what the Lakers are going to be crawling through to not make the playoffs.
And you'll know it's true when each of them plays every game with a business suit tied to their ankle.
When rain comes down at the end.
They all stand there like looking up at the sky. But anyway, so we got our season predictions coming up. We'll tell you who's going to win the Western Conference, the Eastern Conference, all the big fancy awards. Talk a little bit about the Lakers, how many games we think they're going to win, and Kobe.
Although there's been a bit of a spoiler.
It's true. Okay, it's not 60. It's somewhere south of 60.
Come on, 58. Come on. It's that tough a Western Conference. They're going to win 58 and not make the playoffs.
Brutal.
It's not that the season was bad. The West
brutal.
Was just
that
hard.
Right. All right, and we'll get to that, and we'll talk Steve Nash, talk the preseason impressions, the whole Lakers and Genie and Henry Abbott, and everybody's all mad,
that
and people
bastard.
Are losers, and people, and all that kind of stuff. J.J. Barea is a loser because he's going to go back to Dallas.
By the way, you know who's scared to play with Kobe Bryant? Henry Abbott.
That's right.
He is crapping his pants
at
the thought of playing
now.
With Kobe.
That's right, and that means Jeannie Buss doesn't want him on the team anyway. All right, and we'll get to all that and more after the big headlines. Andy, we start here where Klay Thompson and Kawhi Leonard, at least as of Monday, are both still neck deep in their negotiations for contract extensions.
I thought you were going to say the shit.
Well, they're in the shit when it comes to contract negotiations. Both guys
probably going to come out smelling a lot better than the Lakers.
Max extensions. Both guys are not yet being offered max extensions by the Warriors and Spurs. A, do you think they'll get them? And B, would you give them give both guys max deals?
I think Kawhi Leonard for sure will get it one way or the other. I mean, he's far too valuable for the Spurs, in particular with where they are right now with their big three all getting older and just San Antonio as a marketplace. You take away Tim Duncan, you potentially take away Greg Popovich. They're not proven. And you want to make sure that a young, budding, I think, superstar in Kawhi Leonard is locked up. Klay Thompson, I think, will probably get his money, but I think Golden State could maybe take a bit more of a chance because they're in a much more desirable market. You know, they've got an owner that I think has a little more pockets, so to speak, than they've got going over in San Antonio. But in the end, I think probably they'll both end up getting paid.
I think, Rick, if the Warriors don't max out Klay, then somebody else will over the summertime. And the Warriors, if they want to keep him, will end up having to pay it anyway. I would give both guys their money.
I would
because
too.
In 2 years, a max deal for Klay, a max deal for Kawhi Leonard, when the cap goes up and the TV money starts rolling in, particularly if they're not asking for opt-outs or things like that, you know, which I haven't read anything about that with Klay, at least. Kawhi Leonard, that might be part of it, where, you know, that third year opt out. I mean, look at what Chandler Parsons got, and you know, you can't always play that game.
Look at
what Gordon Hayward got. If those guys got that, and that's what the market was, and Kawhi Leonard's 23 years old. Klay, I think, is 23 or 24.
Something like that.
That's what these guys are going
to
get.
Plus, the other thing, too, with the Warriors, and maybe I will now amend my position to they're going to end up doing it, they didn't give up Klay Thompson to get Kevin Love.
Right.
You can't possibly lose Klay Thompson after not getting Kevin Love. I mean, that would be absolutely
excellent point, Andy.
Stupid. A proposal that would dramatically alter and reform the NBA's current draft lottery, Brian, has failed. It needed 23 votes out of 30 owners. It only got 17, according to Yahoo's Woj. We all know who
that
is.
Just easier that way.
It's easier that way. Phoenix, Philadelphia, OKC, New Orleans, who in this particular case would be abbreviated NO, and it's very fitting, Detroit, Miami, Milwaukee, San Antonio, Utah, Atlanta, the Wizards, the Hornets, and Chicago all vetoed this. Some would say
all of those teams small market except for Chicago, which just behaves like one.
Yeah, and the Wizards.
Yeah, that's true. They're only now getting into the scheme of it.
But you can, Miami. I mean, you
know, LeBron, small market again.
Yeah, I guess they are. That is true. A lot of it depends on whether or not LeBron's there, or at the very least, Wade is there. Some would say that this reform is aimed at the Sixers the way the new CBA, current CBA, is aimed at the Lakers. My question is, do we even need a reform of the draft lottery?
There's a lot of talk about, you know, just sort of anti-tanking measures generally. Like you say, Andy, the Sixers and the way they've... So obviously, generally speaking, when you play the tanking game, it's a wink and a nudge, and you kind of like, okay, we're going to be good this year, but really we're not. Whereas the Sixers are just brazenly being like, look, this is how we're going to do it. If we can find a guy we think is going to be a superstar who isn't going to play for 18 months, even better.
Or,
and so we'll
in
do
their
it
case,
2 years
I was
in a
gonna
row.
Say,
when, you know, if we can find another one, wait, how about a guy who's going to stay in Europe for another 2 years?
They are in
great.
They are in what I refer to as YOLO tank
yeah,
mode.
Yeah, I mean, and so they're taking this concept, which is the best way to get good quickly again in the NBA is to be bad. And they're taking it to an extreme in without even trying to hide it in a way that I think is offensive to certain people around the NBA. But I'll say this. I think generally speaking, tanking, where you are intentionally trying to lose as an organization, is something that is suboptimal, we'll say. It's not the ideal. You all, it's in a perfect world, everybody's trying to win all the time. But in basketball, where every year there are only two or three or four guys that can really transform your team and be your LeBron, your KD, whatever it might be, what people hope with Wiggins or Jabari Parker, whatever it might be, you have to give the bad teams an opportunity to get those guys. And if you flatten out the lottery odds, too many good teams are going to end up with the good players, and some of the really bad ones even when they're trying to do the right thing, are never going to be able to get access to the talent that they need. Tanking's not perfect in a, you know, in a la-la happy world. It wouldn't happen. But it's not that big of a deal. No, it doesn't affect the game that much. And people should just let it go.
It's not a big deal. I mean, I would rather see teams do what the Sixers are doing than like last year with Cleveland and Milwaukee, where they made these absolutely stupid moves that you could see not working a mile away in an effort to try to fool themselves into thinking that they were more than just moderately competitive. It turns out they were disasters, and they ended up getting the number one and two pick anyway. I don't want to see teams rewarded for doing stupid moves.
Plus,
I would rather see a system in place like what Philadelphia is doing. And as for, you know, ticket, you know, people who buy tickets, season ticket holders, if you're paying attention to your team, you know what you're getting in for. And what teams like Philadelphia, or I would say even the Lakers, could be doing, considering just how expensive those tickets are, style out your season ticket holders. Let them know that you appreciate them. Give them some perks. Say thank you for hanging in with us during this in a way that doesn't count against the cap, in a way that you can financially afford, but then do what's
lap
best.
Lap dances.
Sure. Sure. Everybody
Laker
loves lap
girl
dances.
Lap dances.
Men like lap dances. Women like lap dances. Children love lap dances.
At least women that men like lap dances.
Absolutely. I remember I went one time years ago. I want to make sure I'm clarifying. Years ago, well before I met my current wife, much less married her. Years ago.
Pussy, we know. It was before you were married.
I went with this girl that I was dating to a strip club. Her idea. She got a lap dance. Her idea. That was wonderful.
Who paid for it?
I did. Gladly.
Because if he had her to pay for it, that's the trifecta.
No, you just hit
the triple crown
there.
No.
Brian, I'm a gentleman.
Classy.
But let me
and
tell
then
you something.
We all went to Denny's.
That was a nice evening out.
Good, clean fun. It's overrated. It's not a big deal. And it's one of these things that's just sort of unnecessary. Happens in the NFL.
Right.
You know, we all remember the suck for luck t-shirts and this and that. This is not a problem that's specific to the NBA.
Plus, it comes up with great slogans, like you just pointed out.
It's just not that big a deal. Finally, Andy, our friend Ben Golliver, he's really not our friend, but I bet he would be.
Well, I mean,
if he knew us.
People
who know us like us.
He is our journalistic friend. He's our friend over Twitter. We've exchanged emails with him. We've done previews with him.
Andy wants to help him move.
I did want to help him move.
He ranked on SI.com, he's ranked.
I hope that was his stuff, actually, by the way, that I got of an apartment.
Might have just been stealing. He ranked teams by entertainment value,
it's all
sort of like their version of the league pass rankings. Top five teams are the Cavaliers, the new threesome up there with LeBron, K-Love, and Kyrie Irving. That makes a lot of sense. They should score about 1 billion points a game. The Clippers with Lob City, OKC, especially once Kevin Durant gets back on the floor. The Warriors should be a ton of fun. The Mavericks, they round out the top five. At the bottom, Andy, is a team I think we would all rather stab our eyes out with forks than watch, the Indiana Pacers.
Good Lord, man.
And right there in the middle are the Los Angeles Lakers at number 16. Too high, too low, or just right?
You know, my initial reaction, Brian, was that is way too high.
It's awfully high.
That is way too high, because I tweeted out during watching one of the preseason games where the Lakers looked really bad.
I will say, the 8 preseason games they played were not really very entertaining.
Right, which is, and again, I apologize.
And it's preseason basketball. I
apologize for not saying specifically which game, because after a while they all just sort of blend
in together. First of all, how many games in the preseason can you play against Utah and still make them entertaining?
Right, and I tweeted out that I have a bad feeling this season could remind you a lot in terms of style and what Byron Scott is emphasizing. A lot like Mike Brown's Lakers, except less talented and with less inherent entertainment value.
Right.
Which,
that's not an endorsement.
No.
That's not what they're using to sell their season ticket holders.
But then I looked at the rest of this list and who came in behind the Lakers, and truth be told, there are not a lot of teams that you would look at and say, okay, they're automatically more entertaining.
More fun to watch.
Like 17 is the Timberwolves. And if you're not looking for good basketball,
But just pure entertainment, pure athleticism, pure up and down, the Wolves may be more fun.
Oh, they're going to be jumping all over the place right. with Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine.
But if you're somebody who actually cares about the basketball,
that's
end of
less
it,
less attractive.
The Knicks are not going to be fun to watch. Grizzlies are never fun to watch.
I mean, they're fun, but not like in a let's go to the movies. Watch a big summer blockbuster kind of way.
Exactly. I mean, that's a good way of putting it. The Wolves could be fun in a way like a Tony Scott movie can be a lot of fun, but it's a popcorn movie, and you have to really be willing to accept those empty calories. The Hornets. Lance Stephenson is fun to watch. The Hornets.
But they're a slow kind of, defensive-oriented team.
The Pistons will be fascinating to watch.
A lot of talent there.
Not necessarily fun, but maybe you'd elevate them ahead of the Lakers just on the car crash value of it. The Bucks are not going to be fun to watch. The Jazz are not going to be fun to watch. The Kings could be more fun on certain nights to watch. So,
yeah, but look, I mean, all of these teams below, and then it's the Hawks, who nobody, even Atlanta, they don't watch. The Nets
are
suck.
Not going to be
Celtics,
fun.
The Celtics, especially once they get rid of Rondo, won't be fun to watch. Magic, Sixers, and Pacers. I mean, some of it's like, what do you find entertaining? Do you want to watch young players who could be developing and all that? But you're right, the basic point of it.
I came up with 2.5 teams.
Is, you know what, hopefully, knock on wood, 82 games of Kobe Bryant, just watching Kobe could be more fun than watching those other things.
That should actually be the slogan this year for the Lakers. 10 teams are less fun to watch than us.
Which, by the way, this really tells me, is there a lot of teams that just aren't that entertaining?
No.
All right, so those are your big headlines. Season predictions coming up, Andy. But let's start with the Lakers and a sad but not necessarily unexpected development last week. Steve Nash, the team announces, will not play at all this year, which means his career is essentially over.
Yeah, as you said, it was not unexpected. This is, you know, it's sad in the way that, like, when your 97-year-old grandmother dies, it's sad, it's emotional. You think back on the happy days and you think about, you know, what could have been, but the reality is you knew it was
coming.
And it is
important to point out that Steve Nash is still alive.
He is still alive.
Still alive.
But as I pointed out over Twitter, we have watched his career go out as the sports equivalent of Old Yeller.
It hasn't been good.
And it's
finally
been horrible.
Yeah. You know, there was some hope that maybe he could play a little bit and contribute, but as a practical matter for the team, this probably helps them because, you know, Byron doesn't have to do 82 games of, can he play tonight? Do I have to bring him off the bench? Do I have to start him and all that kind of stuff? They can, you know, they can get Jordan Clarkson on the floor. They can get Jeremy Lin playing. And now currently, you know, about 47 minutes a game because Wayne Ellington is hurt and Ronnie Price is hurt. And I don't mean, that's basically who the only guys they had anyway. You know, Kobe can't play that much and Jordan Clarkson is 9 years old. So, you know,
and maybe that
helps his trade value. There's all kinds of, you know, positive benefits for that. So from a practical standpoint, it doesn't really impact the team because, you know, whatever. But it is a shame to me. I feel like that Lakers fans just never had it, even if it was for 20 games this year and then the plug gets pulled from it. A bad metaphor, I think, to use for now. But even if it was like, you know, 15 or 20 games that he got to play.
He did kind of sign the DNR heading into this year.
But where Lakers fans could have seen what basically the highlight, which was last year against Philly, that one game he played, where you got a feel for what the guy could still do when we could all let him in and he would get a chance to play. It's just a shame that this is how it's
finished up. You know, I mean, at this point,
up.
Honestly, and I speak as a Laker fan, I wasn't really even thinking about it in terms of being able to see it in a Laker uniform because, I mean, at this point, we know what Steve Nash has done over the course of his career. We know what him playing well looks like. So, and 20 games of it isn't really going to offset all the damage that has come from bringing in Steve Nash. And there has been
because
a
overall,
lot.
Because what you're saying is overall, the trade hasn't panned out.
You could argue that Phoenix
when
got
you,
the best
when
of this one.
You balance the scales here.
You could argue Phoenix got the better end of this
and
one.
And maybe that's something we can talk about on a different show.
Right.
I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here.
Right, but for me, it's just sad. Forget the Laker end of it. Just to see a career that, forget great, has been so encompassed by joy and fun and the way everybody has loved watching Steve Nash play. I mean, everybody. If you love basketball, you love watching them. I mean, I know there are even Laker fans, you know, during that period where the Lakers and Suns
right.
were really 05, heated
rivals. Sure.
Right, 2010 when the Lakers took them out en route to the finals. As much as you may have hated those teams, in the back of your head and heart, you knew Nash was
awesome.
The,
I mean, look at this. I wrote about this on the blog. It's like, here's a guy who is a little dude. I mean, he's. I mean, I think he's listed at what 6'3", 6'4", whatever.
Something
he's
like
a
that.
Little, he's a really kind of fellow, and he's able to control the movements of nine guys on the floor who are all bigger than him and faster generally. And less Canadian and all of these things. It's just, it was a remarkable thing to watch over the course of his career. You know, he had this sort of underdog appeal that was really cool. And just the way he could manipulate the floor was remarkable. And, you know, the shooting and the passing and all that. The skill set was remarkable. I mean, everything about the guy, he really is one of the great players of this generation. And it would have been good to see him go out playing the game.
I mean, we've talked about this before, Brian. What we've seen from Nash, and obviously this is exceptionally extreme, these last 3 years for Nash. I mean, they've gotten progressively worse and worse and worse to unfathomable to
from a health
can't
standpoint.
Play. Yeah,
right.
From a health standpoint, from the ability just to even get on the court at all. This has been my worst nightmare for Kobe in terms of the last two years.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, Kobe does not seem to be in nearly the same physical place as Nash, and I'm not implying that he is.
No, but Nash, when he showed up, until he bumped knees with Damian Lillard, was fine.
Right.
People he played in 85% of his games over the last, like, 3 years.
Right. People forget
he
was coming off an all-star season where I think he played 62 of the 66 lockout-shortened games
that
season.
Right, he was on the floor all the time.
There was no reason to really worry about him. And Kobe is coming off two pretty significant injuries at 36 years old with so much mileage. And I've had very frequently expressed concerns about his ability to stay on the floor. And my worst image for Kobe over the last, and like worst fear for a career that, you know, I've really appreciated and admired would be to see him struggle to stay on the floor.
I think I do wonder if some of the antipathy towards Nash that a lot of fans have is, at least for some of them,
I don't know,
sort of a little latent fear that, like, this could have. It's happened to the guy that we have very little emotional investment in, but it could happen to the guy.
It's what it represents.
Right, exactly. I mean, but it's funny. Like, I forget who I was talking to about this. It might have come up on the air when we were, you know, filling in on ESPN LA. I would do the trade again. And all these people who sit here and say, well, it was easy to predict that Nash would get hurt. That's true. It was it's very easy to predict anything.
Right.
I mean, you can just do it.
Just say it.
Yeah.
Nobody holds you in anything.
I predict Andy's going to be eaten by wolves by 4 o'clock this afternoon. Might not happen, easy to do.
Dude, the news cycle by tomorrow, no one will remember.
But, you know, yes, it's easy to say Nash is getting older. He could get hurt. And I think even the Lakers figured, and Mitch has said this, that, you know, that third year is sort of a gravy year. I think they felt like they got here and then he broke down. Okay, it was worth it. But, you know, the way Nash got hurt was such a freak thing and was so impossible really to predict and what would the chain reaction that came from it. It's like a doctor saying, you know, yes, diagnosing the patient with, you know, 18 months to live. You've got terminal cancer. You're going to die. You have 18 months to live. The patient hears the news, goes outside and gets hit by a bus. Well, yes, technically speaking, the doctor was right. His prediction is correct. The patient is dead, but he didn't really die of what you thought he was going to die of. So, I mean, there's a little bit of that, I think, with the Nash injury. And I would go back and do it again. I thought it was a good trade at the time, and I still think it was a good thing to do.
I just wouldn't have started him that second game against Portland because then he wouldn't have been on the floor. He wouldn't have knocked legs with Damian Lillard. There's like a sliding doors scenario
somewhere
where Nash just avoids that contact and everything turns out better. I mean, maybe the Lakers win a title.
Probably not. There were other problems, but, you know,
but Nash, it turns out fine.
That season is different. Last season he plays 65 games or something. And then this season, who knows?
But it's just awful to see a career go out like this. I mean, it's really as many, you know, jokes as we've made, if nothing else, you know, to laugh to keep from crying. It's terrible.
Any takeaways from this preseason? It was very disjointed. You know, a lot of guys on and off the floor.
Well, I mean, as far as positive takeaways, I thought as a whole, Kobe looked pretty good.
As a whole.
I don't even know if concern is the right word for Kobe, but question in watching him play is we didn't see him operate out of the post in ways that we saw in the triangle where, like, you know, he would back a guy down, but not to turn around for a jumper, but you could see him really orchestrating the offense. And we often saw, you know,
right, where he's working not just as generally speaking, when he got the ball in the places where he kind of wanted him, it was to get it. It was right. Taking a shot.
And the reason I bring this up is because, you know, Byron and Kobe and other people have talked about this being a very post-centric offense, that they want to be a team that's smash mouth, Brian. They want to get down and gritty and, you know, grind their opponents down. And if they want to run an offense through the post, the only option is Kobe. There is nobody else on this team that you can run a post offense through. And thus far, we haven't seen that from Kobe. And I didn't know if that was maybe a matter of they've been missing some of the guys that they would look, you know, to space the floor to have Kobe do that with, or maybe that's a part of the offense that they're looking to implement later. The last concern I have, maybe this is something physically Kobe can't do as well.
I don't think it's a question necessarily that. I think it's just, there's a difference between running an offense through somebody in the post the way that Chicago has done it with last year with Joakim Noah when Derrick Rose wasn't there, or the way the Grizzlies do a lot of that where Pau Gasol or Marc Gasol is a pivot guy, you know, to move the ball around. I think when people talk about running the offense through the post, really all that is code for getting Kobe the ball where he wants it so that he can take the shots that he wants. You know, Kobe as facilitator, Kobe as, you know, as a guy who's going to distribute, if teams bring doubles when he posts from 15 feet away, then, you know, yeah, he can make those jump passes and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how much he's really going to get double teamed. I think most teams are going to
sit
there.
That's a good point.
I think for the first part of the season, at least, teams are going to make him make enough shots efficiently that they're not going to, look, say what you want about Kobe. He is a very good passer, and if you leave somebody open, he will find the guy.
Absolutely.
And I think teams would rather, knowing the Lakers, especially at the beginning, could have trouble scoring, are going to be much more satisfied to let Kobe take harder shots than give up easier shots to lesser players. And so I'm very curious to see how much teams double him at the beginning of the season. My big takeaway, though, Kobe's the best player on the team. There is not a player on this roster more important than Jeremy Lin, because he is the only guy, and I'm, you know, including Kobe to some degree in this, who can get into the lane with his head up and make a pass. Kobe can, you know, Kobe didn't do a lot of putting the ball on the floor, driving and stuff like that. He can still operate a little bit out of the pick and roll, but it's not going to be his strength. He's not as explosive off the dribble as he used to be, obviously. Nick Young, when he comes back, can put the ball on the floor and get to the paint, and will.
He just ain't looking to pass.
But he's not going to throw it. He's not going to pass the ball. Xavier Henry can get to the lane, but won't distribute when he gets there. The Lakers looked so much better with Lin on the floor than when he wasn't able to play. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
So he is the most important player on the team in terms of their ability to function and win games. Julius Randle being the most important player in terms of
his development. And I was going to say, in terms of other takeaways from the preseason, I liked what I saw from Julius Randle.
Yeah.
I thought he looked good out there. He at times looked overwhelmed just by the speed.
Going too fast.
Right, just by the speed and, you know, just the different level that he's playing at. But he didn't look intimidated.
No.
And I thought that was really important.
When you see the skill set of a guy who can get the rebound and take the ball up the floor himself without having to make the outlet pass, can make a good interior pass on the break, moves the ball nicely for a young player inside. You know, he's not a polished player. He looks a lot, you know what he reminds me of in terms of like when you see him try to make a move in the post is Blake Griffin 2 years ago.
Right.
Where it's just like he's like a giant puppy with like the arms and the legs.
But you can see the wheels turning.
And he's a talented player.
Right.
I thought when they drafted him, based on what everybody said, that the odds of him being a bust were pretty low. I don't know how high a ceiling is. He's an all-star. Is he whatever? But it does still look like he's going to be a very good NBA player. And if he turns out to be capable of being the third best player on a championship team,
that's a win
for the Lakers.
And
absolutely.
The best thing, too, is that given how good I think Randle has looked on the whole and that talent, that potential, the Lakers did not bring in a 33-year-old forward that would block some time.
No, Andy, they did. And in an interesting development,
damn it!
You know, in an interesting development, as much time as we've spent trashing the Carlos Boozer idea, I have now officially trolled myself by selecting him in the 11th round of my basketball fantasy draft.
So when we're in the locker room, are you going to be broing up to him?
I might be.
Trying to get stats?
Yeah, it's like, I knew it was coming. I was sitting there going, this is so appropriate.
I deserve this.
But in the 11th round of a 14-team draft,
you got to take him.
Guy's going to put up 13-8 probably right. This year.
I mean, he's going to be out there taking away minutes from Julius Randle.
It's important.
You know, there's some stats
someone
that come
should
there.
Benefit from that.
By the way, I love how many people, when we're talking about guys you can run an offense through in the post, you know, the list beginning and ending with Kobe, how many people have been, what about Boozer? Have you watched him
right.
play?
If the offense you want to run is throw the ball to man 14 feet away so he can shoot jump shot. Which is an offense. That's
right.
Something
it's
you can do.
But that's not really running an offense through somebody.
It's not poetry.
I will say this, though, about Boozer and those 14, 17-foot jumpers, they are really pretty to watch.
Whether
they go in or whether they don't, they are gorgeous to watch launch.
I find his beard no less off-putting in purple and gold I did in red and black. But I do hope the Lakers find a little help for Kobe, or he's going to set a record for the most difficult jump shots in one season.
He might have been looking to do it anyway.
Possible. We got to think about his legacy. You had some...
That was funny.
There's only a couple years left, and the playoffs are a long shot.
There's only so many of these I'm going to put
only
up.
Only so much you can do. I mean, I think we've between the stuff we've done on the radio, which hopefully people have heard, you know, have dissected the Henry Abbott article itself to death.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Henry Abbott wrote an article? On Kobe, I should say, to be specific, where basically, you know, global warming, Ebola, our dysfunctional political system. These are all things that are fundamentally Kobe's
fault.
When
in reality, it's just the political system. Right. Ebola is totally not his fault. I mean, Kobe had been in the league far longer than we've had an Ebola wave. I mean, that's just not fair to put that on Kobe.
How many letters of Ebola are also in Kobe? Just saying.
Three.
The four.
Man, I'll tell you right now, if that virus was called Kebola, Henry would have a real point.
Because then you really couldn't spell Kebola without Kobe.
Henry's writing this piece like, damn it! I'm missing a K.
Somebody would put that on T-shirt. You can't spell Kebola without Kobe.
Actually, you know what? As unfair as that is to Kobe.
I mean, technically, you'd have to move some of the letters around, but it would be worth printing anyway.
I was going to say, as dick a move as that would be to Kobe, I'd make
t-shirt.
Those shirts
it's
because they'd sell, and I could use the money.
It's a funny t-shirt.
I would apologize profusely to Kobe.
And Ebola victims, by yes. the way. More importantly, than apologizing
to Kobe. I would donate some of the proceeds. Not all.
5% of every t-shirt sale
because again, I could
goes
use
to somebody who once knew or read about Ebola.
Yes.
More interesting, I think, than the article itself, which, you know,
at this point,
I think it's been hashed out. It's been the reaction, I think, from Jeannie Buss to the article, where she was going to be, as luck of the draw had it, was going to be in Bristol anyway. They put you through the car wash. You're on Mike and Mike, and you're on Colin, and you're on the TV shows and the whatnots and the whosits.
And then you do a car wash. Like, literally, you take your rental car through a car wash.
It's complimentary. At that
yes, it's the least they can do.
They also give you a Danish. where Jeannie Buss made the big quote that was getting played a lot was the one where she said that anybody who is afraid of playing with Kobe is a loser.
Loo-hoo.
And
there. The
Lakers don't want them anyway.
Right.
What was your big, you know, thought about all of this Jeannie stuff?
Honestly, I didn't like how Jeannie approached it. I really didn't. I didn't like how she reacted to it. I felt like she came across very defensive and in a lot of ways like a fanboy. I mean, I kept waiting to,
maybe in part because she, you know, as it's been reported, she was really the driving force behind giving Kobe that contract when he got it.
Well, I mean, for whatever reason, I mean, I don't care why she did it. I mean, or why she would react that way, or where her role in the contract was. Although, like you said, she has been widely reported as the impetus for it. To start calling, you know, other you know, prospective free agents, you know, losers who are afraid to play with Kobe, you know, or even suggesting that there could be some.
She could say, that's not really what I said, but that's how it's going to be.
Right. And also, too, that's not even what Henry said in this piece that, by the way, both you and I have had a lot of issues with. And we both feel like the narrative that Kobe could be a deterrent to free agents contains a lot of truth to it. And that's something you and I have said many, many times leading up to where we are now, that we thought Kobe could actually get in the way of getting some free agents, but not because they are afraid of playing with him. And I think presenting it like that may...
No, I mean, I think there's a legitimate thing to say about, you know, being afraid, you know, not afraid, but not wanting to deal with some of the negativity that, you know, if you play with Kobe and you lose, you get blamed for a lot of stuff and Kobe's going to get more credit.
But that may not be a matter. That's one of my point. That's not a matter of fear. That's a matter of, this is a pain in the ass that I don't want to deal with for a team that I know won't be that good.
It kind of comes across as just protesting too much.
Well, I mean, I kept expecting the interview, like, you know, to pan back to her and half of her face would be painted purple and the other half gold. I mean, for real. Like, it's so fanboy to be like, they're just a bunch of losers and we wouldn't want them anyway. It doesn't sound professional. I mean, like, I would have preferred
it's
her...
a little bit when she, like, referred to the salary cap as icky,
right?
I mean, talk about it anymore.
I would have preferred her approach this the way we've heard Mitch talk about Kobe, where he's been very candid and saying, you know what, Kobe can be a handful, Kobe can be difficult to coach, Kobe at times can be difficult with his teammates, but you know what, he's brought 5 titles,
right?
So the trade-off is one we'll make every day of the week.
Of
and by the way, they should make every day.
I mean, of course.
So, I mean, I would have preferred Jeannie, first of all, not treat the article like it hurt her on an emotional level that much. Because it really, it came across, again, not all that professional in the reaction. I would have preferred she was just more candid and say, look, we know that Kobe isn't for everybody. And we know that having Kobe around, there can be some
trade-offs.
There
are a lot of reasons why players sign and don't sign with a player. Where I really objected to the feature was that it boiled everything down to Kobe or not Kobe, which, by the way, is what happens on basketball Twitter. But you don't want your owner to necessarily reflect that kind of thing.
And then, too, you know, the part where she said, you know, this coming from unnamed sources, if, you know, I'm going to get to the bottom of who this was and find out who was talking to Henry and they won't be employed.
Sure.
I mean, again, beyond the fact that, like, let's not treat this so emotionally. Let's stay a little more grounded. Let's not make this into a bigger deal than what it really is. With all sincere respect to Jeannie, who you and I both have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, I like Jeannie a lot. She's great.
Yeah, on a personal level, I like her. Jeannie is the last person who really should be lecturing about airing dirty laundry with the franchise. Because Jeannie's had quite a history with putting their issues out on Front Street. And I don't know if she's really the person who has, you know, the gravitas to be lecturing someone about that.
Okay, so finally, Andy, we have reached that point where we make our season predictions. The season is kicking off on Tuesday. People will want to know. They've got their money out, and they want to know where to put it for all these different awards and you know, who's going to win titles and all things. They're waiting for our word before they gamble their hard-earned money this season. So let's try to lead them the correct way. You want to do Lakers stuff first or last? We'll save that till the end?
Let's save that till the end.
All right. I will throw a category at you. You throw another one at me, and we'll just talk that way.
Okay.
Let's start with finalists from the East.
I'm going to say the Chicago Bulls.
Ooh. Who are your 2 finalist teams? Chicago and Cleveland?
Yes.
So you got then you have the Bulls getting out.
I think the Bulls have more experience. They have a little bit more depth, and I think that front court is going to be difficult for the Cavs to deal with.
I agree with you. I have the Bulls winning the conference in the regular season, winning the most games in the regular season, and similar to what Miami did in their first year together, Miami actually getting through to the finals.
Okay.
All right, your turn.
Western Conference winner.
This is hard.
Yes, it is.
This is really hard. I've been trying to figure out exactly how I wanted to say, because there are 3 or 4 teams. I feel weird given how much better they were than everyone else in the game last year, not putting San Antonio back up, because they didn't do anything to get worse.
No, they brought back the whole gang.
Old
damn
band
is white.
So it seems strange not to put them through again based on their titliness. But I actually had as my finalists OKC and Golden State, with OKC going through.
Interesting.
And but I am so not confident in any of that. You could probably talk me out of that pick in 15 seconds, if that much.
I have the San Antonio Spurs getting back to the Western Conference Finals, and they play the Clippers with the Spurs coming out.
Okay, yeah, I saw way too many problems on the wing for the wings for the Clippers this year to get that far. I feel like they just don't have enough stuff.
That is what the trade deadline is for.
Real problem. They were out rebounded by over, I think, about 100 rebounds in the preseason. Maybe they can fix that, but they're also, the way they're structured, it's going to be tough for them to make a lot of big moves once the season goes along. NBA champion?
San Antonio Spurs repeat.
San Antonio repeating. I have OKC. MVP.
One, LeBron James.
Correct.
Rookie of the year, Brian.
Jabari Parker.
Correct.
All right. Coach of the year.
I'm going to say Monty Williams. I think he's going to
Interesting choice.
I think he's going to get the Pelicans just this close to the playoffs. They won't end up making it. People are going to be impressed.
But 44, 45 wins.
People are going to be impressed with the leap or progression that the Hornets take or Pelicans take, even if a lot of that really is Anthony Davis.
Do you have
Davis.
A team falling out of the playoffs in the West?
Right now, and I go back and forth with this, but right now I think it's going to be the Grizzlies.
Okay.
I think it's going to be the Grizzlies. Yeah, what about you?
I don't, actually. Still have the same eight because I think I think the order will change, obviously. Dallas, I think, is going to move up. Houston's going to move down. You know, Memphis, I think if they stay healthy, will move up.
I think Memphis is the team that's going to fall out for Phoenix. That's my prediction.
Well, I see we have Memphis going in opposite directions.
Right, but I think it's going to be really tight. I mean, like the fall or rise that I'm talking about.
It only needs to be four or five
exactly.
games.
Exactly.
I mean, Houston's going to be worse, but you know, they're still a pretty good team, and they won 50-something games last year, so they got to lose, you know, six or seven. You know, there's some wiggle room there.
Your coach of the year.
Rick Carlisle, because I think the Mavs are going to be the team that wins games in the Western Conference that people are surprised by.
Coach of the year is very difficult to predict anyway.
It is, but I think they could jump high. I know they made the playoffs last year, but they're not talked about as an elite Western Conference team. And I think with some of the moves that they made, they brought back Tyson Chandler. They were very good last year. Dirk is still Dirk. Monte Ellis was, you know, Carlisle kind of got him
under
control.
No, he was much
better
for them than I thought he'd be.
I think they're going to be very good. They'll probably jump up to maybe where Houston was last year, and that can be enough to get. And plus, everyone knows Rick Carlisle's behind Popovich as the second-best coach in the NBA.
He's a very, very good coach.
The other guy, by the way, who could be a dark horse for this is Eric Spoelstra. If Miami finishes somewhere in the 4, 5, 6 region and wins in the high 40s.
Then he's literally showing Spoelstra what he can do without LeBron.
Yeah, so that's my dark horse.
Hard to figure it out. Like, I thought about David Blatt, but then I'm like,
no.
Not with that roster. Exactly. I mean, he's a rookie, but
not with that roster.
Defensive player of the year.
Anthony Davis.
I thought about Anthony Davis. I ended up going with Dwight Howard.
Could.
I think Dwight this year, between having Ariza, who's going to help make him often look, the Rockets and him, look better defensively, I have a feeling that Dwight this year is going to present himself differently than we've seen the last few years. I get the sense, and maybe this is from 5,000 feet above, that he's sick of the narrative. And in the same way that you saw LeBron a few years ago get sick of the narrative and kind of take control of it, I don't think he's going to do it as decisively as LeBron because I don't think Dwight is capable of doing anything.
Emotionally and physically.
He's physically capable. I think he's getting back to the point where he's at least physically strong enough to pick up a narrative. But I don't know about mentally, but I think he's going to be able to do it mentally enough that he's going to reclaim some of that form.
I chose Davis because, and I thought about Dwight, but I think what's going to happen with Davis, assuming he stays on the floor, is he's going to have such a monster year, but not quite enough to get past LeBron. His team may not make the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. So he may not be in the playoffs. Hard to win MVP if you're not in the playoffs, but people will want to find somewhere to put him and reward him. Plus, he's going to block a ton of shots, which is kind of what one of those, you know, sexy defensive statistics that everyone understands. Tons of highlights. And I'm not sure if you saw that clip from the preseason where he went out, I forget which team it was, but he was defending the pick and roll and guarded both guys at the same time.
Somehow managed to do stuff
like that. People are going to point out, and Anthony Davis will be.
I agree with your logic, but I've got that covered.
Oh, okay. MIP, most improved.
Anthony Davis.
I wonder if he's too good already. You think so?
Nope. Or not? I don't think he is at this point.
This is another weird award, like where you either need to be really shitty and then get suddenly competent, or it could be somebody like Anthony Davis who makes
the league. I think Anthony Davis has not arrived enough to a point where people think he's too established to win this award.
Okay, that's fair. That could be true.
And then I think with the effect he's going to have on the Pelicans, who I think are, you know, health assumed, are going to have a better season this year.
They absolutely could make the playoffs. I have them as the 10th best team in the conference right now, but they could totally make the playoffs.
I think that is where Anthony Davis is going to end up getting rewarded with most improved player.
Yep.
Your choice.
Mason Plumlee.
Okay.
Because I think Brook Lopez is going to be in and out of the lineup, and Plumlee is a guy that people remember from the World Cup this summer, and you know, and so on and so forth. He's going to be the more traditional approach to most improved, where you're the guy who didn't put up huge numbers and then suddenly becomes an important dude.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
That's
my choice.
Sixth man of the year.
I went with Isaiah Thomas.
Okay. No, I buy that.
It's reasonable.
In that system,
he's going to put up 16 or 17 points
a game. They're a playoff caliber team.
Playoff caliber.
I'm going to go with Taj Gibson.
Same kind of concept. Well, important player on
exactly. You don't win sixth man of the year if you're not on a pretty good team.
Yep.
They just don't give it to you.
All right. So those are did we forget anything?
Nah.
Those are the big season predictions, big award predictions. Let's get to the Lakers. You'll notice that neither one of us had the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals or the other part, the actual finals.
Or the actual playoffs.
Everything that happens with them this year gets to what happens with Kobe. How many minutes does he play? How many games does he play? Because if he doesn't play a lot of games, good God, is that roster in trouble?
Well, in trouble or setting themselves up nice and sweet for that pick?
Right. top five protected pick on the remnants of the
Nash deal.
I would
say they're in trouble like a fox.
Yeah. All right. So minutes per game for Kobe, I will set the over-under. Now, Kobe has said he can't tell you what the number is because then the minute he goes over it even slightly, everybody's going to freak out. I will set the number at average minutes per game, 32.5 over-under.
I'm going to take the over, but just slightly. I have it down at 34 minutes a night.
Okay, I have 33 and a half.
Okay, so we're basically in the same ballpark.
Yeah, I think especially as it gets going, it's going to be hard for them to keep him on the bench. You know, for a guy who's used to playing 36, 37, 38, 31 or 32, it's hard to steal those minutes.
You know what, 33, I mean, that's a reasonable amount of minutes
for Kobe at that age. 33.
Right, I think that is reasonable. If you start playing him less, then at that point, A, I think Kobe's just going to get grouchy. But then B, kind of what's the point of having him on the roster?
But this is where it gets to how much help does he have too. Because
he
could play 32 minutes a night, that could be a lot more difficult than playing 35 if, you know, Nick Young, Jeremy Lin, or whatever can let him take possessions off on offense. So he's not always having to do the heavy lift. If it looks like what he did in the preseason with that kind of heavy lifting that he has to do, he's going to have, you know, he's either going to play, you know, they're going to have to play him 31 or 32 minutes a night, or he's going to die.
Well, I mean,
because that was not good.
I'm just thinking about this, regardless of success or failure for the Lakers. I'm just thinking about what can you get away with without Kobe just becoming incredibly moody.
33 for me is the number.
That can work.
All right.
Number of games Kobe plays, 33 minutes a night.
I'm going to say 68.
Huh. You are more.
I am an optimist.
You are more optimistic.
I am an optimist on Kobe.
I went with 60.
Okay.
And
it's still not terrible.
By the way, though,
six.
That 60, yeah. But 60 was me really trying to convince myself because I'm honestly in my heart picturing it lower. I really want to be wrong. I really, really want to be wrong.
It is nice to know that you're not cheering for Kobe to get
hurt. No. As much as there are a lot of people who think
haterade.
Right. I don't want to see Kobe Bryant's career go out in any way other than befitting of him. I don't mean being competitive
for a title.
I've got him
playing 82 games this year, but I really hope I'm wrong about that.
No, I'm just saying, I would never want to actively root against a career as great as Kobe's. I appreciate greatness too much, but if you're asking me if I truly believe 60, no, I don't.
All right, over under for wins, Andy. This is what people have been waiting for, because neither one of us have sounded all that optimistic about the team going back from the summertime. You might have heard the first 4 minutes of this podcast where we use the word shitty a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If I set, I believe a lot of the projections like Kevin Pelton and some of the eggheads in Vegas or whatever are all around in the low 30s. I will say 32 and a half. Are you going over or under?
Over, but only because you can't play half a game. And I have it at 33.
Wow.
I think
32 and a half is a tough number.
I have it at 33.
Yeah, because, you know, if you think Kobe's going to stay healthy for most of the season, then, you know, they won 27 last year with everything going wrong, then, okay, it looks like, you know, Kobe is probably worth 5 or 6 games by himself, maybe.
Could be.
Could be. Which, by the way, on the NBA level is a lot.
Yes, it is.
Before you sound like that's insulting, so, oh, Kobe's only worth 6 games, with surrounded by this bunch. I mean, who is the second best player on the Lakers? When people ask me, why do you think the Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs? And they're like, but, you know, they got Jeremy Lin and Carlos Boozer's not bad. I'm like, these guys, they're all competent professional basketball players. They're much better at basketball than I am. That's not the point. Who is the second best player on the Lakers?
I would say it's either Jeremy Lin or Jordan Hill.
Okay. That's probably reasonable. And if you have to hesitate, if you have to think about that answer, it really should be because you're trying to figure out, do I think Westbrook is better than Ibaka or Ibaka is better than Westbrook?
Right.
Like, if you have to answer, like, is Tony Parker better than Duncan?
Actually,
or maybe it's Kawhi Leonard.
That I even have to think about it is actually kind of irrelevant. The problem is my two answers I'm choosing between.
That's what I'm saying. If you're thinking about, maybe you have a good problem, like, well, I really think Ibaka is underrated. Okay. If the way you have to think about it with the Lakers, you can go through the entire Western Conference, and I understand it's not totally apples to apples because Kobe is better than some of the best players on those teams. Not all of them, but some of them. Every team in the Western Conference has a better second best player than the Lakers do.
Yeah.
All of them. Whether you're talking Derek Favors or Gordon Hayward or, you know, maybe even Trey Burke if he develops this year in Utah, or Enes Kanter, or, you know, Sacramento has Rudy Gay, who's better than any number two on the Lakers. They're all better than the guys in the Lakers, which isn't to say that they can't work really hard and win some games, because effort in the regular season will win you games. But it's not going to win you into the playoffs in the Western Conference. So if you set it at 32.5, if guys stay healthy, I think they'll clear that, but not by much.
And actually, this second best player example, it illustrates.
And by the way, if you get to the third best part of if you start going to the third best player.
No, but it starts illustrating for me exactly why I think there's no way in hell this team is going to make the playoffs. Kobe in 2006, which I think most people consider his best season. That was the one where he averaged 35 points a game, the season of 81, where he ripped off like 10 or 11 straight 40-point games. Kobe had to kill himself to will
that. 35 points a night. He played, I think, 40 minutes a night, almost 40 minutes a
night. To will that team into the playoffs, that team was coached by Phil Jackson, and no disrespect to Byron Scott.
Better coach.
Byron would admit it. And that team had, as its second-best player, Lamar Odom, who is better
than the second-best player on this team.
Way better. You can argue that this current team has more, you know, has better players like, you know, 4 through 8 or 4 through 9. I think this team actually has more depth than that team. But this
if they can get guys back on the floor.
No, it does. I think they do. I think they actually do. But the NBA is a star-driven league, and wins are typically star-driven unless you have such a great, you know, collection of parts that can forge a greater sum.
Denver could be a good example this year of a team that is sneaky competitive with a bunch of B-plus parts.
Or the then Bobcats, now Hornets, last year.
Right.
But that is
Al Jefferson played at a pretty near elite level last year.
Sure, but, you know, they did.
I understand your point. Right.
And this is a brutal conference.
Better than it was in 2004, 2005, 2006, no question.
And Kobe, you know, this was Kobe 9 years ago with great health, arguably the best player in the game. And he had to kill himself to get them into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's exactly. I did a thing for Mike and Mike today while I was at the studio. That was exactly the point I made. The question I was answering, can Kobe get these guys to the playoffs? That's the comparison I made. It's just better coach then, better number two, easier conference, and he barely did it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not. I mean, look, I want them to be competitive. If the Lakers can stay in it this year, it's a phenomenal story. It'll make the season so much more interesting, so much more fun to watch. Because the flip side of it is, I don't think they're going to be bad enough to keep that pick. Like, think of it last year when everything went wrong last year. They were catastrophically bad last year. It was the worst season they've ever had. and everybody got hurt. Kobe didn't play. The supporting cast got hurt. All I mean, and they still won 27 games and finished with what, the sixth best record.
Right.
And so that didn't get them into the top five, and even getting in the top five doesn't guarantee you keeping the pick, because you have to, you know, somebody might jump over you in the lottery. To guarantee keeping that pick, they got to be in one of the three worst teams in the NBA. One is taken, Philly. Sorry, I don't. There's no possible way the Lakers can be bad enough to be worse than the Sixers. You know, Milwaukee,
the Wolves will probably have something to say about that.
The Wolves aren't going to be very good. Milwaukee's not going to be very good. I mean, there's some really shitty teams out there. But for the Lakers to be one of the five worst teams or the three worst teams, where that's really hard. So it'd be great if they could stay in the playoff race. It'd be so much more fun, so entertaining. Great story for Byron Scott. Great story for Kobe.
Sure.
To talk about a chance to go back to the playoffs, which nobody in their heart of hearts really thinks is going to happen.
certainly nobody in this studio / dining room.
Certainly none of the losers who didn't want to sign with the Lakers this offseason. So hopefully it happens. But those are our big preseason predictions. But it starts tomorrow. We'll find out whether we're right or wrong beginning on Tuesday, and then four games in five nights for the Lakers, all against really good teams.
Both in back-to-back.
Yeah. So
the ideal way for this team to kick things off with half the team hurt.
Settle in the things. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see how it goes. See everybody next time.